We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From the Mobile Pod World headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider from Learfield.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you. Adam, how was your weekend?
It was lovely. I enjoyed it, and I'm enjoying being back on the twice-weekly pod train.
Yeah, back in a rhythm.
Yeah.
New year, new us.
Yeah. I'm really the same person. Do you make resolutions?
Just a little bit older. Yeah. No, I don't make resolutions.
I don't either. It's just another day.
How can I make a resolution when I'm already leading the perfect life? What would I need to change? There's no sense in that.
That's a good point. You've already made the move to the backpack. Like, that would be a resolution type thing.
Yeah, that would have been a resolution. I also realized during the holidays that no one ever knows what to get me because I'm at the point where if I want something, I just buy it. Like, I'm just like, I need a new umbrella. I'm buying it. I need a new something. I'm buying it.
Sorry, everyone. Umbrella just got axed off the Christmas list.
Check that bad boy off the list.
Also, I bought my own galoshes, so there you go.
I did buy some wet boots, some heavy wet weather boots a couple months ago.
Like the duck boots?
No, these are even bigger than that. They go all the way up. They're legit boots.
Are you going, like, fishing in a stream?
Hey, you never know. Hey, it's been rainy. It's been wet. This has been the wettest year on record. Back in 2018, it was super wet.
So wet that it's up to your knees? If it's up to your knees, that means I'm going to drown.
No, I'm good. My feet are dry. I will say I have received two separate compliments on my backpack lately. Totally unsolicited.
From listeners or just from random folks?
From people.
So, talking listeners about, or random folks?
Well, I don't know. I don't know.
You didn't ask them? You were like, are you a pod listener?
Yeah. They're just like, wow, that's a nice backpack.
You were just out in the wild, and they're like, oh, I really like the way you're carrying those documents.
I'm really looking forward to adding in the, and I haven't taken advantage of this yet, but I got my wife one of her Christmas gifts. I've got her the little.
An umbrella.
No. I got her the battery, like the battery you can put in your purse and charge your phone. You know, I'm going to do that because, as I've told you, I've got a port in the bag.
Right.
So it's got a little pocket to get one of those external batteries. You just plug it in, and then you can plug your phone into the outside of your backpack. I have not taken advantage of that yet. I'm going to.
But does that mean that your backpack will explode if you put it on the plane? You know how some of those bags that have the battery thing, you have to be careful about it?
Yeah. Why are you always bringing me down, Adam?
So far, it hasn't, though. So that's good.
Well, I haven't taken advantage of the option yet, though, either. And now I'm going to be all worried about that. Thanks, Adam.
Something to think about. Well, I go on some of the same planes as you, so I'm invested in this.
Well, the Tar Heels took a plane. Oh, by the way, we're going to talk to Bobby Fraser coming up in a little bit today. 2009 national champ, now the head coach of Brother Rice up in Chicago. We caught up with Bobby while the Tar Heels were in Chicago and chatted with him about just what's going on and some fun Tar Heel memories. So we're going to talk about that in a little bit. Later on, we'll look at the matchup with NC State coming up tonight at 9 o'clock over in Raleigh. And Adam probably has a list. I have a couple things as well. So we're going to be rocking and rolling.
I am opposed to the 9 o'clock games.
The Tar Heels are in an odd sweet spot this year of noon and 9.
Yeah.
It's like all their games are noon on the weekends and 9 in the midweek. And I have to say, Adam, as much as I dislike the 9, I love the noon. I love the noon on the road. I love the noon at home. I love the noon in a boat. It doesn't matter. I love the noon tips. There's just something about Saturday noon. And, I mean, we don't like it for football, but Saturday noon or even 2 o'clock I could deal with. It just – that feels like ACC basketball to me. I love that time period of the day, and it's like a lot of games are going on, and I just love playing during that time period.
They're at the five-game current stretch is noon, 9, noon, 9, noon.
Yeah.
And then 7 on a Monday. That's kind of weird.
Well, I can – I've learned to accept the Monday games. I love the Monday games when the Tar Heels aren't playing in them. And I don't even – you know what? I tell you what I am glad we got away from, although they still do the one, is that Sunday night game. But I never watch the Sunday night game.
No.
Even when football season gets over with, rarely am I like, BC and Florida State are playing. I need to watch this.
No. I got no time for this.
And normally, if an ACC game's going on and I am free – I'm going to watch some of it just because I like basketball and I think it's helpful for what we do to see the other team. But that Sunday night game just never catches my interest.
No. I didn't even know they still did it. I'm surprised to hear this news.
Yeah.
No.
Miami and Louisville played this past Sunday.
Is that right?
Just 2 days ago.
Huh. I was totally unaware that game even occurred.
Yeah.
That's how far off the radar. But Miami-Louisville, that sounds like a Sunday game.
Right. Yeah.
Carolina-Pittsburgh, that's Saturday at noon, heart of the ACC stuff.
And what a day it was. Adam, I thought the Tar Heels played pretty well. I don't know how good Pittsburgh is. I think Pitt is better than it has been. But I think Pitt still has a long way to go. But I don't think you can ever take for granted a win in the league, and especially a win on the road in the league. You take that, and your column was kind of about this a little bit after the game, that while there wasn't necessarily anything super memorable or whatever about this victory, it was a very comfortable road win in the league, and you'll take those anytime you can get them.
Yeah. Would you rather have a 2-point win on the road or 25? I'd rather have 25. I'd rather Carolina win every road game this year by 25. That would be fine with me. I do think it's kind of funny how, like, we all feel like we're obligated to say, well, I think Pitt's better. If Kevin Stallings had coached that game on Saturday and Pitt had played that way, what would everyone have said?
Yeah, that's true.
But because it's Jeff Capel, they sure do compete. Well, yeah, but they don't put it in the basket very often.
Well, I think their body of work to this point is better than it has been.
They're playing like the Cap 8 conference.
And I do think they have – I think their guards are talented, but they're clearly not, 2009 Pitt right now. But
I don't think they're going to go 0-18. They'll get somebody.
Right. I mean, they're going to get 4 to 6 wins in conference play, and that's a step – that's a step of improvement for them.
I think 6 might be high. I'm going under 6.
But more importantly, for the Tar Heels, they went up there and took care of business. I thought a couple things that stood out to me, Adam. One was Coby White kind of finding his offense again. And not that Coby's been bad offensively, because he hasn't been. But we haven't seen him have kind of an explosive scoring day since Las Vegas. And I thought he played well. He still turned it over a lot in the game. I know the Tar Heels would love for him to combine one of these games where he scores 22 points and has 5 assists and 1 turnover instead of kind of either having a good passing day or a good shooting day. And I was blown away that not one person asked Roy Williams about how much zone Carolina played in their postgame. And so as we are doing this podcast. We have not done Roy Williams Live yet on Monday night. When people hear this, that will have occurred, and I am planning on asking him about it because I felt that was one of the biggest stories of the game, is how much zone Carolina played. And did the Tar Heels do it simply because it was working and so they stuck with it? Did they do it because Roy Williams is thinking about moving a little bit that way and mixing up his defenses more often as they go through conference play? Was it just due to this particular opponent because Pitt does like to drive to the basket? I don't know. And so I'll be interested to hear what his answers are to that because I have not talked to him about that and he didn't get asked about it in postgame. But I thought that was one of the biggest stories of the game.
I thought it was interesting. Most times when Carolina goes to the zone the first time, it's the point zone. But this time it was just a straight 2-3. And I think it's so interesting how the 2-3 used to be like you played that, but you were worried that the other team was going to shoot 43s against you. But now when you play 2-3, really you just put whoever is your quote-unquote big guy, and for Carolina there definitely were quotes around that sometimes, you put him under the basket, and then you spread out the other four, and you really cover the three-point line better and kind of dare them to throw it inside, which Pitt didn't want to do. I thought it was obvious in the way the players reacted to the zone that they had not even practiced it that much because we saw Kenny Williams was kind of coaching up Kobe White and Leaky Black on kind of where they needed to be and what they needed to do because, of course, Kenny was on the bench due to the fact that there were a lot of whistles in that game,
yes,
many on Kenny Williams. And so they weren't even sure of some of the nuances of where to go, and Kobe White talked about it after the game. About how he kind of needed Kenny Williams to point him in the right direction in that defense. So it's not like it was something, it doesn't appear, that Carolina had said, all right, we're going to save this for ACC play and then unleash it on everybody.
Right.
I'm guessing Coach Williams is going to say something to the effect of, well, Jones, we just couldn't guard anybody without fouling him. And I had written it on the board, and that was one of the main things was defend without fouling, but we couldn't. And they were in the bonus 6 minutes into the game, so I had to go to the darn zone or else everybody was going to foul out.
Right.
But sometimes occasions like that lead you into something that might be beneficial down the road.
I think, this is my opinion, Roy Williams knows more basketball than I do. I think you need to at least have that option, not just Carolina. I think in college basketball now, because it is so hard to stop the dribble penetration. And so I think you at least need to have that available to you.
Roy Williams also knows more basketball than me. I was interested to see if at some point, because Pitt called a couple timeouts when Carolina went to the zone, and you could tell they were kind of talking about it because certainly Jeff Capel didn't expect that either. I wouldn't have minded seeing then the next step beyond that being, all right, now we're going to throw the trap on them
right,
a time or two once they've gotten ready for the zone. But we know Roy Williams doesn't like to do that on the road. I think he might be willing to do that at home. So I think that, I mean, that gives you three, and Carolina's trapped a decent amount this year. That gives you three defenses the other team's got to prepare for and be aware of, and if one's not working, at least you've got something else to throw out there.
Couple more things. I thought Nasir Little played well again. Obviously, he didn't shoot free throws very well. He would have been in double figures or very close to it had he shot his free throws better. But I just think it continues to see him kind of figure out where he fits in a little bit better and how he can be successful, and that's exciting to see. I thought, you know, Garrison Brooks continues, I think, to just play really well, and there is a role for Garrison Brooks on this team. I've said it several times on the podcast these last couple of weeks. He's just got to stay out of foul trouble, hold on to the basketball, and do everything else that he's doing. And if he does that, I think he is going to be a big part of what the Tar Heels are able to do.
Get some offensive rebounds.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. You hesitate to say this, but he very much could do what a lot of times Duke asks their big guy to do.
He could be Emile Jefferson and be great at it.
Yes. You're probably not going to throw the ball into him and say, go to work, big fella.
Right.
But maybe once or twice a game. But again, he's only a sophomore, so it's not saying, like, this is all he'll ever be.
Right.
That's what he can be best at this year on this team and what this year's team needs him most to do. And if he could regularly give you the production that he gave you on Saturday, I think you'd be very happy with that.
Brandon Robinson, I thought, gave Carolina some really good minutes. He didn't have huge stats, but he was just active. It just felt like he was tipping a lot of basketballs, and he had only two rebounds that were both offensive, but I feel like he like slapped rebounds to his teammates multiple times and, you know, hit an open three, which he can do. Just felt like, again, another person kind of off the bench who is settling into what they can do to help this team be good.
Yeah, his box score was, I felt like, the furthest away from his actual production of anybody in the game.
Yeah.
Because when he was in, it felt like he was doing the right things. He was in the right places. Two rebounds wasn't close to the amount of times he sort of competed. Coach Williams always says, like, I want him to bid on every rebound. Right. It felt like he was bidding on a lot of rebounds. And if he could just be that guy who maybe comes in and the other team doesn't pay a lot of attention to him and he hits a couple three-pointers and then goes back to the bench, that's a great role to have and something Carolina could use.
One final thing, at least for me, this was another instance where we were able to sit next to the Tar Heel bench, which I always enjoy. I mean, we're at home, we're kind of in between the two benches, but we're closer to the away bench, as we've said before. And then on the road, just kind of depending on where you are, sometimes you're right next to the bench, sometimes you're kind of cross, or sometimes like in the, whenever we go to a Big Ten school, you're up in the ceiling. I always enjoy being down there next to the Tar Heel bench just to kind of watch the interaction. And Roy Williams was on fire the entire game. But it seemed like particularly when the game was kind of out of hand and the Tar Heels were up, you know, in that 26 to 32 point range and there were about 8 minutes left, it seemed like he like ratcheted up his intensity to make sure that his guys either didn't lose their intensity or he was coaching some, you know, bench players who were getting some extra minutes at that point in time. But he really was going hard there for particularly that last couple of minutes of the game, at least I felt like.
I think some of those bench players are still competing to get bigger minutes. And so he wants to push them as if he would if the game was a one-possession game. And I don't know. I think that's just him. And I think it shows you how he's still not quite sure what he's got with this team. I mean, it wasn't time to say, all right, good, a 30-point win. That's how good the Tar Heels are.
Right.
Pat myself on the back. I'm doing a great job as the coach. I think he's still kind of in that mode of not quite sure what's there and what he can get out of them at any given moment.
So that leads, unless, do you have something else about Pittsburgh?
You didn't talk about my boy. Choo-choo! Leaky Black, some good minutes on Saturday. Not a great box score, and he forced a couple of shots. But more often than not, when he is in, he does the right thing.
He had that slick move kind of late in the game where he drove baseline, went up and under, just didn't finish. I think he got fouled. They didn't get called. But
well, and he won't, again, this is another thing in the box score that didn't show up. He created that play right before halftime because he got the ball over in the corner, got it to Cam Johnson quickly, who was then able to throw it ahead to Kobe White. A lot of guys get that ball with the clock running down and either sort of hold it and panic or, like, take two dribbles and fire up a 60-foot shot. He immediately threw the outlet. Hockey assist for Leaky Black. I marked it down in my book, Leaky. Don't worry.
I have to think Roy Williams' heart was happy, at least for a moment, after that play. That's just everything he would want. It is, you know, situational awareness, running hard, good execution, unselfish play, just everything you want on that play.
And Kobe White, one of the ones who's running the hardest, I thought that was a good sign that he immediately was heading straight for the rim. There was another moment that I thought was a good sign for Kobe White. It was in the first half because Carolina was going the other way. And Coach Williams called a play. Pitt was shooting a free throw. And Coach Williams called a play and kind of got Kobe White's attention and called this play. And at the same time Coach Williams was calling the play, Kobe White looked at Coach Williams and he called a different play. And they kind of gave each other the, huh, look. And Kobe White said, Coach, they're going to be in zone. And Coach Williams goes, oh, that's right, let's do that. So they did what Kobe White called, scored. I thought that was a good sign because when you start seeing the young point guard and Roy Williams be more on the same page, that's when the offense starts clicking traditionally. So I thought that was good that Kobe was thinking that way rather than just, let's see, how can I get the ball and make an awesome shot, which he's good at that too.
I think it is important not to get – I mean, it's a great win. But I think that – I mean, if not to get too excited just yet and think, ah, the Tar Heels are going at – but I do think if they can get this game tonight against State, then all of a sudden, not that the Tar Heels are going to pencil them in for the Final Four – but I think, man, if you could go 2-0 to start the year with two road wins in the league, that would be enormous. And the importance of just getting that first one is so key because with your first two on the road, while you don't expect to go 0-2, that's at least, I think it is more in play than if you had both of them at home or one at home, one on the, whatever. So to know that you got one of them, I think is comforting. But now you can really take a step forward, I think, because you've done the work here to put yourself in position to get yourself in a really good spot if you can win tonight.
Well, don't take the road openers for granted. Carolina had lost two in a row, and I think four of the past six.
And a couple of them, I mean, it hadn't been against – it's been like at Wake,
right,
and at Georgia Tech. So some of them haven't been against the cream of the crop, at least in recent years.
That being said, I do think – I think tonight's game determines how people feel about the Tar Heels for at least like another 10 days. Because after this, Carolina plays Louisville at home. You feel like you probably ought to get that one. Then Carolina plays Notre Dame at home. Notre Dame's struggling. So the two home games after this, I'm guessing, aren't going to have as big an impact on people's outlook as tonight. For many reasons, some of which are basketball related and some are not. But I would expect the PNC Center, whatever it's called these days, to be absolutely on fire. They'll have their most hilarious signs that will all be put on the video board right next to the scoreboard that says UNCCH, just to put us in our place. And also, it looks like State's pretty good, we think.
So let's talk a little bit about State, although this is going to be hard for me to do, Adam, because I haven't seen a ton of State. I saw, I think, maybe 10 minutes of their Wisconsin game back in the ACC Big Ten Challenge, and I saw about 10 minutes of their game against Miami the other night, or last week. And what struck me, well, a couple things. One is that State, I think, has tried to become good playing the way that Carolina wants to play. They really focus on offensive rebounds. They focus on playing quickly, getting high-quality shots, and they've done a good job at that. Kevin Keats, I think we can agree, has done a good job. They shoot the ball really well, and I think as a team they're above 50%, and that isn't with them pounding it inside necessarily. They've just got a lot of good shooters on their team, and whether that's from three, they take a lot. They take more, at least from what I've seen, again, limited viewing here, they take more mid-range jump shots than a lot of teams, I think, that you may be accustomed to, but they make them. Torn Dorn's always been a good kind of 15-foot, 12-foot jump shooter, and they have a lot of guys who seem to do that. But then my final point is, I just don't know a lot of the guys on their team, and I don't say that like, oh, they're not good players. I just don't recognize them. And there's Dorn, and there's Markel Johnson, and there's Braxton Beverly. But after that, they play a lot of guys, so I'm just, at least at this point, without fully getting ready for them yet, I just don't know a lot about them. They really just had a lot of roster turnover.
Yeah, and it seems like that's going to kind of be how Kevin Keats approaches things, which is fine. A lot of teams do that. They're going to pressure Carolina, and Carolina has to take care of the ball. I think State's defensive turnover percentage is like one of the top five in the country or something. So
yeah, they press.
If you're going to commit turnovers, you can't have just kind of the casual, I'm going to throw it out of bounds turnovers that Carolina's had over the last month or two. If you're going to commit turnovers trying to do something. I think the other kind of weird thing about State is teams shoot really well against them from two because they don't have a whole bunch inside. Mm-hmm. Ordinarily, that would be great for the Tar Heels because you would say, oh, Carolina, just throw it inside and just dominate them. The Carolina doesn't really have that guy, but maybe this is a game where Luke May is able to operate a little more down low. Teams don't shoot great against them from three, probably a lot of times because they're taking rush threes once they beat the defense down the court. So I think it'll be interesting to see. What State is would traditionally be a really good matchup for Carolina because there's not much around the rim. But this year, a little different, might be a chance for your guy Garrison Brooks to maybe do a little more, especially on the offensive glass. You've got to be able to get something second chance wise against them.
9 o'clock coming up tonight over in Raleigh. And not easy to start back-to-back games on the road. So Tar Heels going to try to see if they can start 2-0 with two road victories. That'd be a big step here early in conference play. Have to wait and see. Adam, anything else from the ACC weekend that jumped out to you? Do you know Zion Williamson dunked the ball?
I watched a portion of that game, mostly the first half, because that was the part that interested me. It's just unbelievable. It just really is unbelievable. The love. I mean, and not just for Zion Williamson, but he's certainly one of them. He's really good. But, I mean, Jones, I don't know if you know this. There's freshmen on that team who aren't playing very well.
Yeah.
Who are playing significantly worse than Nasir Little.
Yeah. We're not going to talk about that.
No.
That's not worth talking about.
Clemson, I think they're probably okay.
Yeah, and they have a lot of the same guys. Shelton Mitchell's still there. Marquise Reed's still there. Elijah Thomas is still there. They have a lot of the same players.
I think I wouldn't mind having Elijah Thomas.
No, he'd be good for the Tar Heels, I think. Yeah, he'd be a good – and Carolina was talked to, in the initial – because he started out at A&M, right, Texas A&M, I think, before he transferred to Clemson. Carolina talked to him in the initial recruiting process. It just didn't – for whatever reason, didn't work out. Well,
any big guy from Texas A&M, of course, we know, must be awesome.
Virginia looked really good, although that's a game, I think if you'd have said – top 10 Florida State coming in to play top 10 Virginia in Charlottesville. What do you think's going to happen? I think I would have thought what happened would happen. So Virginia's very good. I think and this may come back to bite me, Adam. I don't think Virginia's as good as they were last year, but they're still really good. So Kyle Guy was on fire in that particular game, and they've got a lot of older guys now because Guy's a junior, Jerome's a junior, Diakite's still there. They've got some older guys. So
this is
Jack Salt's in his 800th year.
This isn't necessarily ACC anymore, but something that surprised me. Mariel Shayok's at Iowa State, and he leads the Big 12 in scoring.
Yeah, and they beat.
And he's really good.
Yeah, because remember, he was struggling at Virginia, and then remember they had like three or four guys transfer out at the same time, and he was one of them.
I had not even thought about him until Saturday night. I was watching some of that Iowa State-Kansas game, and they kept talking about Shayok, and he kept making all these sick moves.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, Virginia used to have a Shayok.
These dope plays.
Yeah. And I thought, oh, Virginia used to have a Shayok, and it was the same Shayok.
Iowa State, their coach seems good to me. I mean, yeah. Steve, was it Prom, I think?
Sure.
Or Prome. They're always hard to beat at home. They just seem to be like a well-coached team to me. From watching from afar.
Iowa State seems like a team Carolina could potentially play in the tournament.
Oh, mark it down. It is January 8th.
They just seem like one of those teams. And, I mean, they're like 13-1.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
So, I mean, that appears as though they're pretty good.
I do enjoy this time. I like January and February. I just like Saturdays in January and February are the best. And I love football, but just being able to have those like really good conference matchups all day long in college basketball. Like I found myself late night on Saturday. I knew I should go to bed, but I was like, well, St. Mary's is hosting BYU. I need to obviously watch a couple minutes of this, see what happens.
I watched some South Carolina, Florida.
Yeah.
I mean, these are two SEC good teams. I need to know what's up with them.
Yeah. Maybe Tar Heels might see them in the future. I need to scout these guys.
Kentucky lost to Alabama.
Yeah. That was almost a massive let it slip away by Alabama. They were up 11 with like 90 seconds left and won by one or two, and Kentucky had a good look at three, which if they'd been playing the Tar Heels would have gone in.
Yes.
So just a fun time of year, great win for the Tar Heels, and off they go.
We got any other big conference matchups this week? All I know about is Carolina and NC State, gents. Duke probably plays at home.
No, they're at Wake, so.
Duke's at home.
I honestly don't know. I don't know past. I know nobody played on Monday, and Duke, Wake, Carolina State are the only games tonight, and then I don't know what's going on the rest of the week.
A lot of times, now that the schedule is the way it is, you don't get your best conference games until February on. You need, like, somebody to sneak up and be good.
Right, and then you randomly have Virginia Tech and Florida State are playing. And it's, wow, all right.
Virginia Tech seems like they're going to be the sort of sneaky good team.
Yeah.
And Carolina plays them relatively soon in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's on a Monday.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm trying to check the schedule. Okay, so later this week, Adam. Oh, busy night on Wednesday. You've got Virginia Tech at Georgia Tech. Clemson, Syracuse. Yeah. Louisville, Pitt. Yeah. Virginia at BC. Could be dicey. Yeah. Miami, Florida State. So, a lot of games. I wouldn't say a lot of great games.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Then this weekend, let's see. Virginia's at Clemson. Duke at
Virginia at Clemson? I give Clemson a puncher's chance.
Oh, yeah. Virginia is at Clemson, said that. Duke at Florida State. Louisville at Carolina.
Florida State plays Duke well.
So, some games coming up.
All right.
Before we get to our interview, well, let's go ahead and get to our interview with Bobby Frazier. We'll do that, come back, and we'll start to get into some other stuff. Quick reminder that we are brought to you by UNC Healthcare and MyUNC Chart. Keep track of your stats with MyUNC Chart. Visit myuncchart.org to sign up. And head, while you're there, just check out your medical stats and then go to unc.edu, and you can see the impact Tar Heels make every day. Learn more about what's happening at Carolina. You can do that at unc.edu. And finally, our good friends at StubHub. Whether your favorite seat is courtside, and those are the only seats Adam accepts, or comes with a bird's eye view, head to StubHub, grab 100% verified tickets so you know you'll get in. After all, they've been hooking up fans with amazing seats for more than 17 years. StubHub, official fan-to-fan ticket marketplace of Carolina Athletics. All right, we were in Chicago with the Tar Heels before the Christmas holiday. While we were there, had the opportunity to speak with former Tar Heel Bobby Frazier. Enjoyed catching up with Bobby. Let's let you listen in to that conversation.
In our continuing effort to have nothing but national champions on the pod, we've got another one.
We're going
to
get every member of the lineup from every national champ. We're coming for you next, 1924.
Yeah, that's right. Get ready, Cartwright, Carmichael. But this one is a very special pod because we have come to the hometown of this national champion where he is in his element.
Road pod.
Yeah, to talk to Bobby Frazier because this is where we felt like he would be the happiest. Right here in Chicago, looking out over Michigan Avenue. And as Bobby frequently tells us, the greatest city in the world. So Bobby, how are you this Christmas season?
I'm doing very, very well. And 100% this is the greatest city in the world, and I'm happy to be here.
Now, I have to say, Chicago is lovely. I'm a big Chicago fan. I have enjoyed the stay here in the pre-holiday season. It feels very Christmassy here. Like, it gets you in the right mood, Bobby.
Yeah, in 2009 we played here, and I want to say it was like 2 degrees. So this 40, yeah. 40 degree weather is very, yeah, very bearable for you Southerners.
Yeah, it hadn't been bad.
Well, and I wanted to ask you, because this is something you're an expert in. Why is Chicago so much better than New York?
It's cleaner.
Yeah, I agree with that.
People are more friendly. The architecture is better. I don't know. It's just, obviously I'm biased, but it's the greatest.
I think the food is better.
There you go. There's more, yeah.
That's what I think. I know people like their New York restaurants.
I had a delicious Caesar salad with my dinner last night.
That's Caesar salad will definitely put it over the top there.
Bobby, what is going on in your life? You're into coaching now. Tell us, just for those who don't know, tell us what's going on with you and what's keeping you busy these days.
So just starting year four back at my alma mater, Brother Rice High School. It's an all-boys Catholic high school on the south side of Chicago. And coaching and working in admissions at the school and really, really enjoying it and having a lot of fun.
How is coaching at the high school? I mean, I would assume coaching at the high school level is a little bit challenging. What are some of the unique challenges about coaching at that level of basketball?
Obviously parents and private school too. I think there's some entitlement too, in that with that they're paying tuition, you know, my kid deserves to play. And so that's the hardest thing is getting through to, and it's more on the lower levels. Like once kids are on varsity, like the parents understand, they know who the players are going to play, but from a kid who's coming in eighth grade when he's the best eighth grader on his team or school or whatever, and then comes to high school, and then maybe he's not playing as much in the freshman level, or from freshman to sophomore, like every level you go up, it gets harder. And then when the kids aren't playing, their parents, they feel that at home, and then the kid will go home and they'll tell the parents, oh, I'm not playing, I'm doing everything the coach says, and which is probably a lie, but then the parents believe their son, and then they come back to us and complain. And so just getting that message through to kids that, you know, you got to wait your time out sometimes and put in the work, and what will you do while you wait kind of determines a lot of your progress. But that's the biggest challenge. But again, I'm lucky at the school that we have, that we have great, great kids. If I said practice at 8 a.m., you know, everyone's going to be there at 8 a.m. I don't have to deal with a ton of headaches.
You've had a ton of exposure, obviously, to coaching, both in your family life and in your career and all that stuff. Now in your fourth year, when it's your team and you are the head coach and everything kind of comes to your desk, what are the challenges there?
I don't know about the challenges, but I just really, really like that, you know, it's my fingerprints. Whatever I decide, whatever, how we want to, you know, a defensive coverage or a certain play or a certain offense that we want to run, it all kind of reflects on you. You know, when I first started, I was trying to do everything identical to Coach Williams. And you know, that's great. Obviously, I learned a ton, and we still do our practice plans thought for the day, all that stuff is still identical to Carolina. When I watched them practice yesterday, it was very, very, very similar to what we do. But, you know, you learn and you try this and try that, and you kind of, you know, get your own identity over the course of the years. And that's one thing that's cool, too, is I've always said that your team takes on the identity of the coach, or the personality of the coach, I should say. And so it's been a fun team. I think our guys enjoy coming to practice, enjoy coming to games, and we like to make their basketball experience enjoyable.
So what are some of those things maybe that when you started, they weren't this way, but now that you've gotten a couple years into it and things have morphed a little bit, what are some things that changed as you've gone through?
Things have changed probably, you know, we were running very, very same secondaries that you know, Coach Smith ran, that Coach Williams ran, and you know, we don't have 6'9", 6'10", guys where we're throwing it inside to. And,
sure.
And obviously you look at the analytics of it and they say, oh, that's the worst shot in basketball, throw it in the post and stuff like that. So we've kind of, obviously we're very guard oriented, and so we're bombing. You know, we're bombing some threes now, which is a little different than most Carolina teams. But there's things here and there, you know, defensively. But a lot of, again, the majority of everything we do is related to what I've learned from Coach Williams and my experience at Carolina.
What's something that maybe you wanted to try when you had your own team and you tried it and it worked and you thought, hey, I'm glad we got to do that. That's a little bit different, but it's working out.
Something that worked.
Let's see here.
No, we have had some success, but I don't know. There wouldn't be like one massive thing. It's just, you know, certain plays here or there, different out of bounds play or whatever. But yeah, I mean, nothing monumental.
I would. So, okay. When like young little tyke Bobby Fraser was walking around and dreaming of being a head coach one day, are you like you thought you would be? Does that make sense? Like, I mean, do you behave on the sidelines the way you thought? Do you do the things you thought that you might? I mean, or has it just been totally different?
Yeah, like going through college, like seeing Coach Wayne, my dad was a head coach for 30 years in high school, and I was, you know, 6, 7, 8 years old. I was the ball boy, like climbing around in the lockers and seeing him coach. And so, yeah, it was always in my blood. But so when my first year coaching, I probably was very, very self-aware of like how I'm acting on the sideline, and I wanted to be like a Brad Stevens and not yell and very cool, calm, and collected. And now in year four, I've gotten a little bit more agitated, I would say. And I always go back to, you know, Coach Williams would always come in the locker room and say, I got to do a better job coaching. And, you know, he would, you know, kind of put it on himself. And so some of that I get frustrated with too, like, oh, I got to do a better job with these guys. But at the same time, I am a little bit more antsy this year with whether it's officials, whether it's with players. And so I don't know. I've got a calm down a little bit and take a deep breath. But yeah, I've had, you know, kind of liked the way I've held myself on the sideline.
Well, now you bring up a topic that came up in our intense journalistic preparation for this interview, your demeanor on the sidelines. Our research turned up the fact that you may have received your first career ejection. Did you try to rip your suit jacket? What happened there?
I didn't have a case of vertigo after I threw my jacket on the sideline. I didn't take off my watch to hit the table or anything like that. But
well, I forgot about that one. Take the watch off, yeah, and smack,
yeah,
the table.
Yeah. All the Coach Williams isms.
That's good preparation, though. Like, if you know you're getting ready to smack the table, just take the watch,
yeah,
off.
But I just figured, you know, if you get your first career technical, you might as well get your second career technical right in the same game. You just be, you know, get them both in.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we had a game last night, and I was not allowed to coach because IHSA rules, if you get ejected from a game, you have to sit the next one out. So we actually won last night, which was great, but on Tuesday was not the highlight of my career. But I don't think I deserved the technicals, but that's neither here nor there.
Well, how'd you get them? We can't just leave it out there.
So the first one, there was a no call on, I have a player that's going to Loyola, a very, very athletic player. He went up for a dunk, guy trailing the play, went to block it. I don't think he touched the ball. You know, a lot of contact, no call. Another official was running by me. I had some choice words. So maybe I did.
Sir, I believe, yeah, you missed that foul call.
Yes, maybe I deserve that. So he turned around to get a technical on that one. And then there's a seatbelt rule in our state. And so I'm not allowed to stand up the rest of the game.
Wait, so is that just if you get a technical foul?
Correct, yeah.
Man, I've never heard of that before.
And so, you know, I didn't say boo to the officials the rest of the game. I'm sitting there coaching my team. And if I would stand up, it'd be to call a play or talk to my players. And then, you know, it's a tight game late in the fourth quarter. Our player dives on the floor. They call a foul on him. It wasn't a foul. I stood up. I said, that's a loose ball. And the same official, who I've learned is a Duke fan, he hit me with the second one.
There it is.
And then that was that. So, but yeah, it was pretty weak, the second one, in my opinion.
Once that occurs, what what goes through your mind? Do you sit there and go, oh, well, that was unfortunate? Do you think, I earned that?
I mean, everyone told me I should have got my money's worth at that point and then went off, but I didn't throw any chairs or anything. I just almost laughed and then turned around and just walked out. So it was, I just wanted to take myself out of that situation.
So it's hard to believe. It's almost been 10 years now since that 2009
getting old
national championship. That really is wild to think. I was telling somebody yesterday that we were talking to you today, and I was like, wow, it feels like they're still like the 22-year-old guys running around, but not the case. Does it ever seem like, wow, that was a long time ago now?
Yeah, I mean, we may still act like it when we're around each other, but it is wild, you know, think, oh, hey, our 10-year anniversary or whatever's coming up, or, I mean, yeah, it just goes by so, so quick, but all those memories and games and stuff, it's still so fresh in your mind that it was such a fun ride that you still talk about it and kind of relive those glory days sometimes.
Do you remember the first day you met Tyler and Danny and Marcus and what that was like?
Tyler, I do. This was at the McDonald's All-American game. And again, I tried to call him when he hadn't committed yet. And I remember calling him because Coach Holiday or someone would give me his number. Hey, try to talk to this guy. And then he never called me back. So that, you know, it's a good start. But then, so he was just a weirdo there. And then we roomed together our first summer in Granville Towers when we were in Carolina at freshman. And I remember him, he was just being a pathological liar. He told me he was a quarterback on the football team and then would pull up an image of a random white guy playing quarterback with a helmet on and told me that was him. He was just a very bizarre human being, but I love him to death. He's still one of my best friends to this day, and you know, we FaceTime a ton. He's in China now playing still, so yeah, we have a great relationship.
Sir, that is Peyton Manning in that picture. Yeah.
That looks an awful lot like Joe Montana, Tyler. Yeah,
I think he Googled high school quarterback and he showed me like the first image, so...
Don't you think that Tyler in China is ripe for a reality television show?
So last year would have even been better. One of his best friends from high school, a guy by the nickname of Moose or Moose Cat, who was another very, very large human being, was over there with him, like nice. Hanging out. And I would have paid top dollar to subscribe to whatever reality show those two were getting into. But I mean, Tyler in China would be pure comedy.
What is it about that group? I still think, I mean, obviously every team's got guys who are close and guys who are friends, but that group of you guys, you and Marcus and Tyler, and it just always seemed a little extra closer as friends and seems to have gone on after you guys left school. What made that group, in your opinion, so close?
Yeah, it's, you don't normally get a class of five guys that come in and stay together for 4 years. And so, you know, Mike Copeland, Danny Green, Marcus, Tyler, myself, they're all great people. That's the one thing that Coach Williams, I think, recruits, obviously good kids, and we all got along. Our families got along. I remember on senior night having all of our families over at the house we were staying in and, you know, having pizza and having a good time. And it was just really, really unique to experience everything that we experienced, the highs and the lows of 4 years together. And, you know, we had a lot of fun in that time and won a lot of games. And, you know, I'm thankful for those friendships and relationships that I have because of it.
If I had told you that night when y'all got together on senior night where y'all would all be 9, almost 10 years from then, which one would have surprised you the most?
Probably Danny, you know. The successful career that he's had has been absolutely amazing. Also, you know, the fact that him and Tyler both have podcasts or have had a podcast out, that would have surprised me as well if you told me that one. But, yeah, Danny's career has been amazing. He actually two years ago came back and spoke to our team and – you know, he's phenomenal telling his story and his career arc and going from the D-League and, you know, working his way up. And but, yeah, it's really, really cool, all the success that he's had.
Now, tell us the couple of stops that – because you played overseas for a while when you were done at Carolina. Tell us the different stops and some of the unique experiences that you had in that portion of your career.
The first stop was in Bulgaria. It's probably a little of assist of getting that first job from Big Voss. Vasco Evtomov.
Oh, yeah.
I think he was over there training, or obviously he's Bulgarian, French. He's very cultured, but the team that I went to lost their point guard, and I was, you know, coming off the 2009 season, and then I signed with them, and that was a wild, wild experience, but I loved Bulgaria. Loved Sofia, capital city, but the coach we had is insane. Absolutely insane. He was getting like massages during practice. Like, he had his pants around his knees one time. Like, our trainer's like rubbing his hamstring and eating food. It was just a bizarre, bizarre experience.
Sounds like a Brother Rice practice.
So he, it's amazing. Like, he was like a celebrity in Bulgaria. And so, like, over my travels, or if I'm eating a restaurant or something, someone talks with an accent and say, oh, where are you from? And they say Bulgaria. I'll obviously know a couple Bulgarian words, but then I'll ask them if they know Titi Papazov, who is my coach, and they just start dying laughing. And like, it's really, really crazy, because he ran for mayor at one point. Like, it's just a bizarre, bizarre world. But yeah, I'm really, really glad I did that.
So where else didn't you have one really, was it Malta or something?
Cyprus.
Sounds
exotic. It's like, oh, an island in the Mediterranean. This is going to be awesome. And it was the exact opposite. So I was there, obviously not in beach season, so it was colder. And but then the team stayed for 7 months. Team only paid me for four. The team folded. There was one game where I told them I wasn't playing. And then they told me they would ruin my career. And so they wanted me to play. And so I played. And then obviously, I went in the game and I was not going to try at all. So it was the most passive game I've ever played in my life. But it was just a wild, wild world. And so, yeah, they still owe me some a lot of money. So if I ever get that, we'll be throwing a party for sure. But yeah. I don't think I'll ever see that.
Big pod listeners probably over there.
And the owner of that team is now a Chicago high school referee. Okay, I got to ask you about this. This is more intense journalistic research. I heard a story that involved you and a few others who you can name if you want to, paying a visit to Jonas Serration's house. And he ended up chasing you with a sword.
See, I wasn't there for the sword night. That's
not what I heard.
See, sword night was not me. My freshman year, this would have been over fall break. I'm from Chicago, so obviously I didn't fly home or didn't go home for the weekend. There's nothing to do on campus. Nobody's around. So it's like me, Hoots, who's now on staff, obviously. I think it was Wes and, I don't know, Preston or Dewey, there's someone else, whatever. Yeah, Dewey was driving. I do remember that. So we were bored. So we got some, obviously some toilet paper, whatever, you know, 19 year olds want to do, and TP your strength coach's house.
Like, right, sure,
on a rainy October night, it's a perfect opportunity for cleanup and stuff after that. So we literally TP his house, and he didn't come out that night, but he also trained the swimming and diving team and thought it was them. So I guess he buried them at a workout the next day thinking that they did it at his house. But then obviously on the banquet after 2009, on my senior speech, I showed the picture that we had of me in front of his car that's just covered in toilet paper. But yeah, Jonas is a legit crazy person, but he's also like one of my favorite human beings. Amazing, amazing talent. But yeah, he's the samurai sword was Hoots. I think Ding Dong ditching him when he first moved to Chapel Hill. So yeah, you always have to run out with a sword if someone's trying to ding dong ditch your house.
I bet there was some like random diver who was just like, what did I do to deserve this? Why is this happening to us?
Exactly.
I don't get it.
Was Hoots able to get away from the samurai sword because he was on his unicycle?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, so did you know that Hoots was a big time unicycler?
I mean,
unicyclist, I guess.
That's proper grammar. When I learned that, yeah, it's very strange and unique talent, but
I had no idea.
Yeah, he's
until like Jones just learned this like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, a month ago.
I learned in college, and yeah, I think he has one in his garage probably.
Oh yeah,
you know who has his unicycle right now? There's no chance you will ever guess. Bubba Cunningham.
Why?
He wants to learn to
unicycle.
He's growing. He's, you know, he's,
and Hoots is
2019 resolution. Learn how to unicycle.
Coach Williams always, and he's told it a lot this year because he feels like, I think that maybe this team is a little bit similar in this regard. He tells the story of, that 2009 team could outscore anybody and didn't really care about defense, even though I kept telling them they had to play better defense until they got to the NCAA tournament. Is that kind of how you remember the arc of that portion of that season, that you guys locked down a little bit more when you got to that point?
A little bit, yeah. Obviously, Ty especially. Ty could have been the best defender, you know, for 30, 40 games, however many we played. But, when Ty, athletically, when he turned it on, he could disrupt anybody. But funny story about that is Hoots was telling me the other day that they were showing like highlights from our defensive clips in 2009 to the team, and Coach Williams made a comment to the team because I guess I had a couple highlights in there playing solid defense. He's like, everybody in this room is more athletic than Bobby Fraser, and look at it. So I took a lot of offense to that, and I had to voice my complaints to Coach Williams when I saw him yesterday.
Of those years, those were just such fun years for Carolina basketball. I mean, even, you know, Final Four in 08, the 06 team that nobody thought or didn't know anything about and then ended up being a very good team. What are a couple of your, outside of winning the title, of course, what are some of your favorite moments, memories from that stretch?
Obviously, outside of the national championship, the Duke game at Cameron, senior night, J.J. Redick, Sheldon Williams, winning that one was, you know, that gets on ESPN Classic. Like, you know, we're texting each other and we're watching that one. And so that, that one's 100% out there. Yeah, that 06 year was just so much fun because, like, there were no expectations at all, like none. And nobody knew who really, how good Tyler would be and all the freshmen. And we played, we you know, thrown into the fire because everybody left for the draft. So we're playing so many minutes. And, you know, the Illinois game, even though we lost it, like, in the fans and sticking around and cheering after that one. And, yeah, I mean, there's so many, good memories. And even when I tore my ACL in 08, like the falling on the bench in the Clemson game and like the Wayne Ellington, like there's just so many little things that you can look back and laugh about. And, you know, it's a very unique experience.
We had a couple 05 guys on the pod this summer and asked them about 05 against 09. And I'm just going to tell you, they said they would kill y'all.
Kill.
What do you think about this whole 09 versus 05 situation?
I mean, that would be a lot of fun, like if you could somehow get them in 2005 and us in 2009 and play the game.
Not right now, no.
Yeah, I don't know. That'd be another interesting question just to figure out who's still in shape to, you know, to still play that one. But yeah, it's obviously I'm very, very biased, but I think the offensive firepower that we had would you know, outlast them.
When you look at it on paper, people who maybe didn't see that 09 team play every single day, when you look at just on paper the results of the tournament that year, were y'all really that much better than everyone else that year in college basketball? Because it sure looks like it.
Yeah, I remember when the season started, we won our first couple, and they're like, oh, they're going to go undefeated. And then we lost our first two in the ACC after that happened. But, yeah, we were – I mean, you look, there's like seven NBA guys on the roster. Even you count Ed Davis, who's a freshman, and Tyler Zeller coming off the bench, and – even Deion Thompson, who's had an insanely successful career in EuroLeague. Like, we had some very, very, very good basketball players. And, yeah, that's I do think we were legit that good.
you were in a unique position where you had started earlier in your career, and then Ty came in, and Ty eventually became the starter. How did you handle that as a 19, 20-year-old guy, and was that hard to do?
Yeah, it was a little frustrating, obviously. You know, I started every game as a freshman, and, you know, I just saw a tweet, I guess, like a couple weeks ago or a month ago when Kobe, like, couldn't start, and so then I popped a bottle of champagne, like 72 Dolphins. You know, whenever a freshman doesn't start every game, I celebrate because I'm the only guy in Coach Williams' history to do that. But, no, I'm joking. I want someone to have that, their, you know, same distinction, I guess, with me. But, yeah, Ty was 100% going to eventually take the starting position. I was starting every game as a sophomore and then had a fracture in my foot and was kind of up and down that whole year. And so that was just a little troublesome. And, yeah, I don't think for a second that Ty wouldn't have taken the starting spot. But it is, you know, your first time in your career where you're not playing. And, I, you know, talk to kids now in high school about that time. Like, maybe I started every game as a sophomore, now I'm on varsity, and you're not playing. And it's like, yeah, it's definitely, you know, a hit to your ego at times. But you luckily – you know, you just got to do it, put your head down and keep going to work and doing what you can. And then junior year, tear my ACL, and that wasn't that fun. So senior year, you know, I just wanted to contribute in any way I can. And obviously I looked around me and say, NBA player, NBA player, NBA player. I don't need to score. So, okay, what can I do? I can talk on defense. I can, you know, throw the ball inside to Tyler every time and fairly easy that way. But just figured out a way to get on the court.
One of my favorite stories of that era is the Gonzaga game in New York when Ty, and I think it was Deion, decided they were going to wear their headbands.
Yeah.
And then the Tar Heels lost that game, for those who don't remember. And then did they ever wear their headbands again?
No, that was like the first thing that we came in the locker room and Coach Williams is going on a tear and take your headband off. And like, so I was like, okay. And yeah, they never, has anybody worn a headband since that?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Is that why you didn't wear a headband?
Right. Yes. I wanted to grow my hair out. And I actually tried to do that in Europe and it was a terrible, terrible decision. I thought I was going to have this like long flowing hair and it just grew up like a mop on top of my head. So, but yeah, I've never worn a headband and no, I won't.
So, in the future, are you thinking you're at Brother Rice for 30 years? Do you want to try college coaching? Do you not just kind of going with the flow right now?
I'm going with the flow for sure. I really, really enjoy this. The whole college thing I tried, and obviously working for Coach Haas, who's now at Stanford, and I think Coach Haas is probably the best coach to work for. And like, he's one of the greatest people around. But I got out of it. I obviously had a quarter-life crisis, and then – you know, you just look at college and it is a grind. Some of the places you have to live and, you know, you have to work your way up. And again, I wholeheartedly think I could do it, but I don't know if I, again, I love Chicago. I love where I'm at right now. I love living here and having a lot of fun. So I am going with the flow, but you know, if an opportunity presents itself in the future to try something new, I would jump at it. You know, I don't think I'm going to retire at Brother Ice. You know, I get that question a lot from parents. Oh, are you going to be here? I'm like,
I'm 32 or whatever. Yeah, exactly, it's like, I got a while to think about it.
Right. All right. So that's been the rumor since I started. But, oh, he's only going to be there a year or two, and then he's leaving. Like, now here I'm at year four. And so, you know, I'm enjoying it, and we got good players there and good kids coming up. And so, yeah, we'll see where it takes me.
What's the biggest difference, you think, in the players you're coaching now and you when you were a player at Brother Rice? Just not necessarily in terms of basketball, but just in kind of terms of how they are.
A lot. The social media thing is crazy. We had a kid get dunked on a year or two ago, and like it went viral. Like it was a kid trying to take a charge, a little 6-foot white kid, like doing what we did. And this kid who's going to college, like playing, like goes and dunks, and like it went crazy. And like I, you know, came in the locker room and like was talking to the kids about how like, you know, guys, like this is stupid that this is, like, he's doing what do we ask him to do? Like everyone's going to get dunked on in their career, but just like because that stuff affects kids and. There was another issue. This is my first year. I was like, you know, I'm good with technology or social media or whatever. And I was messing with a kid like, oh, we're going to work on box outs today because he didn't box out a guy. Guy runs right by him and the guy goes up for a dunk. And like, then the kid came to me and was like, coach, that's like, all these kids are tweeting at me like that. I like, can you take that down? And so I was like, okay, yeah. Like there's just little things like that, that you have to be careful with and things that we didn't have to deal with. But there's a lot to, you know, kids that have to handle as you know, 14 to 18 year olds, which is kind of weird.
Have you kind of had to learn, like, I think when old people like Jones and I hear that, we think, oh, it's just a tweet. Don't worry about it. It's stupid. But like to players that you're coaching that age, it's really serious stuff.
Oh, that,
like it's, I mean, a lot more than just, oh, it's just a tweet.
Tweets and like they know who likes their, and they like this, and like, I said happy birthday to you on Twitter and you didn't like it. You didn't respond. So I deleted it. Like there's just so many little things that they've heard or said. It's like, wait, are you guys serious right now? Like, you didn't respond to your tweet, so you deleted it? Like, yeah, it's I don't know. I try to talk to him about it, but there's just a lot of other extra stuff to deal with rather than just being a high school kid.
I guess social media was just starting to think about coming out when you maybe right at the near the end of
I got on Twitter in 2009. Yeah, okay. After the season.
So if it had been around while there was Bobby Fraser college era, what?
like so the jumping off the off right. the frat, like that took a week to get out, and that was 2008, and it took a week to get out. Someone put it on the Facebook, and then so then some guy who ran a blog in North Carolina took it, and you know he sent it out, and then it blew up, and then it's on Pardon My Take. Like if that happened today, it's, you know, 2 minutes and it's everywhere. It's on Snapchat. It's on Facebook. It's on this. And so that's and it's crazy to think, like, I think, oh yeah, we had to deal with Facebook. We had to deal with social media, but like, it's so instantaneous nowadays that you really do have to be a little bit more on guard.
As you were standing there watching Tyler jump off that balcony, did you have any thought of, I don't know if this is the best idea, or was it just like, this is really fun?
No, we were, 100% in the moment, and this is the right decision. Like nothing will come of this, you know. And a lot came from it. No, so
nothing will come of this.
Oh man, Bobby, thank you for being with us. Adam, do you have anything else for Bobby before we let him go?
I mean, I could talk to Bobby for forever, but he's got to go eat delicious lunch in Chicago, the greatest city in the world,
greatest food, greatest city, greatest people.
Where's the best restaurant in Chicago?
Ooh, the best burger you could ever have is Au Cheval.
That's exactly right.
There'll be a 2-hour wait if you go, but
The no wait app. You don't have to wait in line.
Yeah, you can go have some drinks and then come back or whatever, or you can slip the guy 20 very Chicago way and be seated in 10 minutes. So that works as well if you want to do that. But check out Au Cheval if you're ever in town. Or again, I'm not a huge deep dish guy, so don't associate that with. I mean, there's so much other good pizza and. You know, Italian restaurants, La Scarola, like there's a million places we could steakhouses for days. But it is the greatest.
Where do you tell people to go if they're coming to town and you don't want to tell them like the place everybody goes? Where do you say this is the place you got to go that's really good?
Adam is asking this question solely for his own use, by the way.
That's exactly right. This may never see air.
I think La Scarola, it's an Italian restaurant that apparently the mobsters used to go to back in the day. It's tight, it's small, but it's so, so good. And then anyone else, I tell them to go see Second City for like a show. And you know, obviously that's where like Chris Farley and a lot of big time comedians started and live improv skits and stuff like that. And that's always a blast.
Always good to catch up with Bobby and Adam. I can't remember if we said this during that interview or not. It's hard to believe those guys are like adults now. I still think of them as wacky 22-year-olds, but I mean, you're early 30s, they've all, you know, gone off and making their lives. And we've talked to Marcus Guignard recently. Danny Green's having wild success in the NBA. Bobby Fraser seemed very happy and successful. Tyler Hansbrough's still playing. So, I mean, just those guys have all really done well for themselves.
And doing things that you could imagine them doing. Like, if I had to pick one of that group to kind of travel the world and and make friends all over the earth, it would be Marcus Guignard.
Yeah.
And if I had to pick one guy to go to Chicago and lead Brother Rice, it would be Bobby Fraser. Yeah. Although I thought it was interesting to hear him talk about that people kind of assume, oh, he's there for life, and he's not so sure that's the case.
Yeah.
He talked about how he gave college coaching a try. But, I mean, it does seem like a great fit. I mean, I would think if you're a Brother Rice parent, you're very happy that your kid's getting coached by Bobby Fraser.
I do wonder if he'll be interested in getting back into college or not, because when I asked him that question, I had forgotten, quite honestly, that he had gone to UAB with Jared Haas and just kind of got burned out and didn't enjoy kind of the grind of what he was doing. But he was also so much younger then, too. And I wonder now, after he's, you know, led his own program and kind of seen some different angles from it, if it's something that he'd be interested in getting back into, because I think he'd be good at it.
Yeah, I think if he chooses to do it, he'll be good at it.
But anyway, appreciate Bobby's time. Hope you enjoyed that. We always enjoy catching up with those guys, and good to see him having success, doing a good job. So enjoyed our time with Bobby, and looking forward to talking, hopefully seeing him again soon.
Do you think he loves Chicago more or Tyler loves Poplar Bluff more?
Two different types of cities.
Yes.
I don't know. Hey, we're all from somewhere, Adam. Just how you love Cary.
You got some good restaurant tips in that interview with Bobby.
Next Chicago trip.
Yep.
So, Keith, go back, listen to it, get your notepad out, jot down some notes,
yep,
make it happen. Speaking of notepads, Adam, do you have a list?
I do.
Ooh, baby.
What's on the top of Adam's list? Brought to you by Top of the Hill, where Tar Heels come to celebrate.
Okay, now speaking of notepads on the list, this notepad right here in my hand was the topic of the first item on the list.
Oh.
As you know, Teddy Valentine did the game on Saturday.
Yes, he did.
And as you
yes.
And as you've already stated, we were right by the Carolina bench. So after, I think it was after they had done the lineups, but before the ball was tipped.
The ball is tipped.
And there you are.
You're running for your life. You're a shooting star.
Teddy Valentine kind of walked up to where we were sitting and goes, "Does anybody have a sheet of paper?" Well, of course I do, Teddy Valentine. Yeah. I came prepared. But what I do is I tear sheets of paper in half, like little, like hotel notepad size sheets of paper. Yeah. I tear them in half so then I can pass you and Eric some great nuggets during the game. So I offered him one of my torn in half sheets of paper.
He didn't want that.
He did not want that. He's like, do you have a full sheet of paper? So I gave him like the full notepad sheet of paper.
He just took your notepad.
He didn't like that either. He goes, "Just give me your whole notepad."
He did.
So I gave him the notepad. And then he was like, "You got a pen?" So then I gave him my pen. So now I'm down notepad and pen. So he then writes something on the notepad, like on top of the scores table.
And he wrote for a long time.
Yeah, not like, "Don't push Joel Berry."
Right.
But like something longer than that. Like, "Joel Berry is a great young man who is a good leader of the Tar Heels and a national champion whose number is deservedly in the rafters. And I enjoy watching him play."
Yeah, and like have that, full respect for his abilities.
Yeah, like that length of thing. And then he took the paper, and he folded it up, and he put it in his pocket.
It's a mystery.
I want to know what – it's my notepad. I deserve to know.
Did you get your stuff back?
Yes, but he had used the last sheet on the notepad, so all I got back was like the backing of the notepad.
That sounds exactly like something he would do.
Here you go. And then like he kind of chucked the pen at me with nary a thank you.
Come on, Teddy V.
Hey, buddy. Next time I see you, I might not give you a sheet of paper.
What if next time you see him, he gives you a full, a fresh pad of paper, like a whole pad?
Then I would have considerable respect for him. But next time I see him, I'm going to be like, "Hey, what was on that sheet of paper?
What do you think was on it?"
I don't know. But another piece to the story is, as you know, we were right next to the Tar Heel bench. And so before they had done the lineups, when the officials kind of give the coaches the, hey, buddy, right, like 2 or 3 minutes before the final buzzer to start everything, he came up to Coach Williams and he goes, Coach Williams, I got a message to give you. And then he like put his hand over his mouth so we couldn't see what he was saying. But whatever he said, Coach Williams gave it like kind of the, like furrowed his brow and shook his head.
Yeah, it kind of, it to me appeared to be like he was like, you know, our good friend XYZ is not doing well with his health or whatever. Like it seemed like that kind of reaction from Coach Williams where he was kind of like, oh gosh, I hate to hear that.
Yes. But that and the notepad were within like 5 minutes of each other. So
man,
I thought,
international man of mystery, Ted Valentine.
I thought maybe he was going to write down what he had told Coach Williams and then secretly pass it to me like, Adam, I know you were wanting to know. You're such an intrepid journalist.
I saw you watching us. Here's that piece of information.
It's so awkward, though, when they're having a moment like that and you're right there because like you want to watch them.
I know.
But you don't want to get caught watching them.
Right.
Because you don't want them to think you're eavesdropping, even though clearly you are, because you want to know.
Yeah. You and Teddy V, boys. You're his boy.
We may never.
He's your boy.
Yeah.
You're pad boys.
Well, as long as we're talking about officials, how about your boy, Carl Hess?
Man.
Rough week for Carl Hess.
What was he thinking?
He was trying to step to Scott Pollard.
It was a really odd. It was just really odd. I don't even know what game it was.
I think it was East Tennessee State Samford.
Yeah, and Carl Hess used to work in the ACC, of course. And it just got really messy, and he like fired into the huddle for whichever team that – is it Scott Pollard or Scott Padgett?
Yeah.
I think it's Scott Padgett.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Where he fired into his huddle.
Yeah,
and like,
Scott Pollard, yeah, different guy.
And got into his face and was like – I believe that the quote was, you want to step to me or something like that. Like, what's happening?
But then it led into, like, Scott Padgett's completely weird post-game press conference.
All of it was weird.
Where he was like – I mean, people don't step to me in my real life. If Carl Hess sees me walking down the street in real life, he runs the other way.
All of it was weird.
That scary looking.
I thought you were going to say my boy Paul Zelk, who was one of the officials. Yeah. I'd never heard of this guy before. Like, I mean, normally when you get into conference play, you know even if you don't know him super well, you're like, okay, yeah.
Right.
So Paul Zelk must be new this year. I mean, clearly he is because I'd never, ever, ever seen him before.
Well, and I think even new – to, like, the coaches. Like, I saw him introduce himself to both Coach Williams and Coach Capel.
I did, too. Like, he said, hey, Coach, I'm Paul. And Coach Williams was like, look, you know how you do, like, when you meet, you're like, he was like, Paul.
Or I could go with Z-Man. So, just kind of an odd week in the officiating world.
I am now on train. I'm on board with Paul Zelk. I'm going
to
say it.
I think it's too early to say that just yet.
He nary blew his whistle in the game. There are a lot of fouls in that game. 25 in the first half. 14 of them on the Tar Heels.
It was too many. I enjoyed Marty Ray's tweet that he sent us with a picture of young Roy Williams beside a picture of Jason Sudakis. Sudakis. Yeah,
they really did. I didn't realize that they looked so similar.
Yeah.
But they really do.
And that was in reference to the revelation that you uncovered with your hard-hitting journalism that perhaps Jason Sudakis might play a Roy Williams-esque coach. And also, as we learned from Brian Tucker, or as you learned from Brian Tucker, that apparently Jason Sudakis is a Kansas fan who has a Roy Williams impression.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So imagine guy who looks like young Roy Williams doing Roy Williams impression. That's ratings gold right there. That needs to happen.
So,
I know television.
When you listened to that interview, what did you think? Were you sad that you weren't there?
Yeah, I was. I was like, oh, this guy sounds awesome. I'm really enjoying talking to him. Oh, wait, I'm not talking to him.
God, the flu, like, shook your fist in the air.
Yeah.
Darn you, flu virus.
Inoculations. I'll never be an anti-vaxxer again, even though I wasn't before. Let's see. Wes Durham sent us a very informative graphic.
Yeah, he did. It was of the state of North Carolina, and kind of was like a heat map of where the cookouts were. Of where the cookouts were in the entire state of North Carolina. I was proud to see that the two places in North Carolina that I've spent the most time, which is here in the Triangle and then down in Jacksonville, were both like red hot for cookouts. Jacksonville has like a cookout on each side of town, so you can never
be
too far away from a cookout.
That's how it should be.
Yeah.
I think that map really showed how far the great state of North Carolina has come. it wasn't so many years ago that you had to be in the triad to get a cookout.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And now you can almost go from Murphy to Manteo.
Yep.
I bet that realtors use that map when they're helping, when they're counseling folks on where they want to move into in the state. Like, well, here's the map of the cookout heat map. You should probably buy in this area. So appreciated Wes sending us that. Todd Green. I don't know what Todd Green's job is, but I hope it's making awesome graphics.
He does a good
job.
He
sure does make a lot of them. He sent us an awesome Leaky Train graphic.
That really was an unbelievable graphic.
All it was missing was like me hanging on to like the caboose.
With a starstruck look on your face in the back, like, oh.
With like the star eyes.
Yeah. That would have been perfect. But no, it was awesome.
Yeah.
Also, shout out to our friend Rival Cutouts. Recent, our picture with you pointing at the logo, which is now our Twitter avatar. Did you notice that?
Yeah, I did.
And said, glad you liked your custom acrylic wall mount at Carolina Pod. We're excited to see it in your new headquarters later this year.
Yeah.
So are we.
Me too.
We're number one. By the way, I saw a little, saw the drawings of the new headquarters.
Really?
Saw exactly where the podcast room is going to be within the whole layout of the deal.
Did it have the memorabilia museum in there?
I've got a I tell you, I'm not sure. We're going to fill up the walls in there.
Yeah.
Here's an exciting part. Two TVs in there. We're going to be
able
to. Double
TVs.
Yeah. We're going to each be able to sit around our new luxurious pod table and look at a TV. Yeah. Pod table with like real microphones and stuff where we don't have to wear the headsets anymore. Dude, it's going to be. Yeah. Go ahead, Jasmine. It's going to be a whole new world.
Wow. Well, and now when you come to the Smith Center on Saturday for the Louisville game, it's starting to kind of look like a building there.
Yeah, yeah.
Just picture Jones and Adam in there.
Yeah, when you walk by, you can see the skeleton of the building is coming up, and you can just go, I know Pod World Headquarters will be there soon.
I feel like we should go sign, like, the foundation.
Oh, yeah, like, you know how kids, like, put their hands in the wet concrete?
We should put Big Grits' hand in
it. It'd be like, J-A-A-L dash, what year is it, 19. I love how there's some of those from like 86 that have stood the test of time.
Yeah, that's what I want to have happen.
Good job now, 45-year-old.
That's all right.
You did it.
Speaking of the Louisville game, we have two tickets for that game. How should we get them to the people?
That's up to you, my friend.
I don't know. Well, I'm throwing it out there. We've got two tickets to the Louisville game. Carolina and Louisville, Saturday at noon. I don't really have anything in mind.
How about we do this? How about you have to put you have to do a rate and a comment on iTunes, and we'll take the funniest like comment that you do.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Sure, yeah, I can go for that.
So you got to go to iTunes, you got to rate us.
And if you give us a 1-star, no, you're probably not going
to
win.
Yeah. And then we're not asking for you to be like, "Oh, they're the greatest of all time." That's not what we want the comments. We
want
it to be
say that if you want.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. But we want it to be funny.
Yeah. Use pod lingo in your comment. Okay. Yeah, that's good. And then so we'll have the winner on later this week pod.
Yeah.
Two tickets, Carolina Louisville, Saturday at noon. Chris Mack coming to the Smith Center for the first time. Carolina Louisville's always a good game.
Chris Mack seems fiery to me.
Yes, I agree with that. I'd be interested to see if he does the pregame interview. My guess is no.
I'm going to go yes.
You know who didn't do it? Jeff Capel.
Not a surprise.
But we got to talk to Jason Capel. It's fine. That's all I got for the list because we already talked about Shayok.
Okay. I have two things, including one that's going to be a vacation from life, Adam.
Okay.
But first, I want to mention a tweet.
All right.
Ben Meredith sent this tweet.
Okay.
And he was actually replying to another dude's tweet. So the original tweet was a gentleman named Scott Bollinger, who I don't know. Scott made this proclamation about the year of 2019. He made his New Year's resolution. He said, one thing I'm doing in 2019 is reading / listening to more books and less podcasts / blogs. This sounds like a terrible idea, Scott. Not books. I mean, books are good. The amount of valuable info in books is staggering. Where I only pick up tidbits here and there with podcasts / blogs, it's much better use of my limited time to consume information. Okay. That's not the point of my of this bringing this up. Ben Meredith, fan of the pod, says he agrees with the exception of a couple, and he lists a couple that he likes. And then he said, of course, I'll also be listening to some mindless UNC sports podcasts like At Carolina Pod. I'm frankly a little hurt, Ben.
I'm not sure how to take that.
Mindless, Adam.
I put a lot of effort into this. It's on the card.
I have it on the card. I was up all night working on these cards.
Well, the whole premise is faulty because you can listen to your podcast while you're driving, but you can't read a book while you're driving. That's against the rules.
I've never been a big listener to books either.
No, me either.
I can't get it. I can't get into that.
Well, we've talked about before, I can't read the books on the iPad.
Yeah.
I have to have the actual book.
Yeah.
I recently finished the new John Grisham book, future pod guest. Yeah. We certainly think he should be.
We've put the legwork in.
Yeah. He'd be a good one. I enjoyed his book. I'd like the chance to talk to him about it. Maybe that wouldn't be so mindless if we were talking about books.
Quick reminder, we're brought to you by Pinehurst. Gil Hance, redesign of Pinehurst number 4, open in September to rave reviews. Be among the first to play, pinehurst.com. No, how can you justify that today, at least that I'm aware of. But when we do have one, it's brought to you by Circle K. You'll find great people serving customers in clean stores, offering all kinds of products like ice-cold Coca-Cola. Also, quick reminder, we do have always have time for story time. Carolina_pod@gmail.com. Isn't that what it is?
I think so.
CarolinaInsiderPod@gmail.com. Yeah, there right. You go. CarolinaInsiderPod@gmail.com. All right, my quick vacation from life. So, it's after the Pittsburgh game. And we're done with the broadcast, waving to a couple of Tar Heel fans. I think it was it Ellen Jones? Ellen and who her husband, whose name I can't remember, who we saw in Notre Dame last year. I think that was Ellen who was there, and I waved to her in the crowd.
I didn't get to see her.
But anyway, so I'm kind of—
There were a lot of Tar Heel fans.
There were a lot of Tar Heel fans in Pittsburgh. So I'm leaving the arena, but I'm getting to the team bus. But I'm not 100% sure where the team bus is because I don't arrive to the arena with the team. I mean, I have a general idea. But so normally what I do is I go to the locker room area and wait for a player to start moving the way because I know that they're not going to leave the players. So I just I just wait.
So you leech onto the players.
Exactly.
Okay.
So I ended up and I was behind Kenny Williams. So we're walking. And I'm trying to, like, I'm not going to bother. I don't want to, like, be like, hey, Kenny, tough game today, you know. So I'm just kind of walking behind Kenny. We're walking. Everything's fine. And we go out. There's a bunch of Tar Heel fans. And they're, hey, Kenny, woo, Kenny. And Kenny's waving and being polite as he is. So we get onto the bus. And Kenny does the old, I'm walking up the stairs and I trip. So it's the trip. You don't wait. He didn't, like, wipe out, but kind of stumbled, you know. And so I go, whoa, no injuries getting on the bus. And Kenny turns, and of course, it had not been a great game for Kenny. He turned and he goes, man, this just hadn't been my day. I just nodded my head and thought, you know what, Kenny Williams? We've all been there before.
Yeah.
We've all had the days where we get 4 fouls and can't play very much and then trip going onto the bus.
Yeah. But then we come back and we make 5 threes at NC State.
Then we come back and torch the Nets in Raleigh the next time out.
Yep.
So no worries. I just thought it was nice to remember that Kenny Williams is just like us. These stars eat at restaurants just like we do. One more thing. Boy, big thumbs down for Mitch and the Bears, huh?
Man, that was painful.
That was painful.
I feel bad for that kicker.
He got tipped. The kick did get tipped.
Yeah.
Not that that makes it any better, I guess.
Yeah.
That dude's hit the upright 6 times this year.
That was clutch that they had film of all 5 of those ready to go.
That's pretty brutal when they then immediately go to the montage of you clunking it off the goalpost.
I thought, but as far as Mr. Trubisky goes, I thought he did everything he could do pretty much in order to get his team in position to win. And he also got a tough call at the end of the first half that could have been more points.
Yep.
So it seems like Chicago, sort of the city, or as we like to call it, Bobby's home.
Yeah.
Seems to love Mr. Trubisky, and it seems like they're going to be good for a while to come.
Okay.
Matt Collins, Gunnar Brewer.
Yeah. Yes. Certainly excited for those guys. It stinks that Matt can't be able to play all year, but happy for Gunnar Brewer and the Eagles and see what they do. They've got the Saints coming up next. Adam, anything else before we get out of here?
No.
Okay. So we'll be back later this week. We will talk about the state game. We will look ahead to the Louisville matchup, where Adam will get an award-winning pregame interview with Chris Mack. We will hopefully have a guest. We're working on it. We've got a lot of requests out there. We're hoping to get one locked in. and who knows what else. It'll be a lot of fun. But for now, we're going to let 2009 national champion Bobby Fraser get us out of here on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
I'm Bobby Fraser. See you later, Big Grits.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
Pound box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
See you later, Big Grit.
The preceding has been a Learfield presentation.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig. Inspiring kid confidence.